This is the Cube Show on Demand. Listen live weekdays 6 to 10. Get loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get crazy.
You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's the Cube Show.
It's that all-born radio.
I'm a good person.
Man, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God want us to win the world championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I!
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
Number two, live from the Madison RV studios. Appreciate you tuning in. Listen online, umsports.com. Also, download the app in your app store, iPhone or Android, for free. Search WUMP. Let's go to Kevin McAlpin now of the Atlanta Braves Radio Network. Talk some Braves baseball. Kevin, good morning. How are you?
Doing well, guys. How are you?
Doing great. What do you do on a day off? What do you do when a game's canceled and you don't have to work?
Well, we did have to go to the ballpark for a little while until they canceled that game around 5:30 Eastern time. But I was able to find a local watering hole here in New York called Foley's. If you're ever here in the big city, check out Foley's. It's right across the street from the Empire State Building. It's a really cool baseball and memorabilia sports bar. They've got over 3,000 signed baseballs on the wall. Including one from, for some reason, they asked me to sign one years ago. So had to go make sure that was still there and they hadn't decided to take it down and throw it in the trash. Get a little dinner and most importantly, stay dry because it was miserable here last night in New York.
Yeah, Yankees game postponed, Braves game postponed, the Phillies game postponed. A lot of postponements yesterday up in the Northeast. Maybe good news for the Braves that the game got postponed. Swept by the Nationals, swept by Philadelphia the last two series. That's six straight after being able to get up that same number just before. So besides good pitching in Washington, like we talked last week, what happened with Philly?
Well, you know what? Hey, they had a couple of different ways they let those games get away. The bullpen giving up three straight homers in the finale on Sunday in a game that Matt Kemp homers, gives you a 1-0 lead, and then in the bottom of the inning, next thing you know, it's a four spot for Philly. So that one got out of hand in a hurry. You know, when you look at what happened the rest of the way, the Braves have continued to struggle with hitting with runners in scoring position. You know, they're getting guys on, they're giving themselves chances. The last all three games in Philly, they had chances in the ninth inning to get a base hit and then, you know, possibly win the game, but it just hasn't happened for them. So really the big problem has been hitting with runners in scoring position and the top of the order. And we've seen some changes now with Brandon Phillips moved up higher, Dansby Swanson bumped down lower. Top of the order just really struggling to get on base to give Freddie Freeman some RBI opportunities. He's got seven homers but only nine RBIs, so they're trying to find some ways to get some guys on ahead of him, and hopefully moving Brandon Phillips up in the order kind of gets this offense sparked and going at the top of the order.
Speaking of trying to get some of that offense going, the Braves brought up Lane Adams from AAA Gwinnett and designated Chase d'Arnaud for assignment, announced that yesterday. Snitker said he was looking for a little bit more bang from the bat yesterday when talking about bringing up Lane Adams. So what do you think Lane Adams brings to the table? Do you think he'll bring a little bit more bang to the lineup?
I do. You know, we saw Lane during spring training a lot. He was one of those guys that came in typically in the sixth, seventh inning and played all three outfield positions, four homers in 13 games with the AAA ball club in Gwinnett to start this season. And I'll tell you what, guys, for a big guy, he runs the bases really well too. So if he can get on, he can be a stolen base threat as well. So he's a good athlete. We saw a pretty good sample size from him down in Orlando, getting a lot of playing time. So look, he's a guy that can come off the bench and can take you deep. And when you have a bench with guys like Darnold and Bonifacio and Jace Peterson and Kurt Suzuki, we knew coming into the season you weren't going to have a whole lot of thump on that bench. So I think Lane Adams can give you that. And I also think that down the line, it wouldn't surprise me at all if we do see Ryan Howard get a chance to come up here, maybe on the next road trip that has a couple of interleague stops on it. So I think that's a very intriguing name to keep an eye on here. He's played a couple of games at AAA, swinging the bat well, so he could be another piece that could come up there and change the game with one swing.
I was going to ask you about Ryan Howard. A few days ago, it was announced that he's going to make his AAA debut with Gwinnett against Paul Tuckett. How realistic is it that he could find his way back to the majors, and would that be possibly a byproduct of a Braves team desperate for some hitting?
Yeah, you know, I think it is. I really do think it is realistic. You know, look, he got on base all four times, a couple of singles, a walk, and he was hit by a pitch on Sunday. Last night he had an RBI base hit as well. So, look, his days of playing the field are behind him. You know, you're not going to see him out there taking, the place of Fred Freeman for a day. I think that was pretty much solidified last season in Philadelphia when Pete McCannon basically made the change and had Tommy Joseph go to first base. And Ryan Howard just became a very, very expensive bench bat for you last year in Philly. But look, it's a minor league deal. It's not going to cost you a whole lot. If it doesn't work out, you cut them loose and you cut your losses, and really there aren't a whole lot of losses. But I do think it's realistic we see him. And when you talk about, you know, the Braves' new ballpark, right field, more hitter-friendly feel than Turner Field was. So, look, I think there's a lot of factors that weigh into this, and I would not be surprised at all if the Braves at least give him a shot to see what he has left here in the next week or two.
Visiting with Kevin McAlpin of the Braves Radio Network. You mentioned earlier, Kevin, about that lineup changing and the order of things changing. When you have a game postponed, rained out like you did last night, I know Julio Teheran's on the mound again tonight. He was scheduled to go last night. But how much does that change the pitching order for Brian Snitker?
They're actually just going to stay in line. They're going to look at this as just an extra day off for everybody. So Julio will stay in line. Now, unfortunately for the Mets, they're not playing along with Brian Snitker's philosophy. They're going to skip Robert Gesellman, and the Braves will see no Syndergaard tonight. So a rematch of opening day just a couple of weeks ago up here in New York. Julio threw the ball extremely well, as did Noah. So it runs could be at a premium tonight at Citi Field. But when you have a rainout like this, especially when you've got three veteran starters in your staff, none of those guys, believe me, would be upset about getting an extra day off and just staying in order and continuing on as they had planned.
It's pretty intriguing to think about how you can sort of keep things rolling and how that'll be handled sort of moving forward. What's the biggest benefit of this off day, you think, for the Atlanta Braves?
Well, you know, just to clear their heads. You know, they had Monday off and then the last night off. So, you know, it's been a rough go. So I think, you know, the chance to kind of just get away from it for a couple of days, you know, again, kind of hit the reset button here a little bit as your road trip, you continue living out of a suitcase here in New York, a couple more games, and then the team goes to Milwaukee for the weekend. So I think just the chance to, you know, kind of get away from things and forget about some of the tough luck they had over the weekend in Philly. So the guys were all at the ballpark yesterday. They all took their normal pregame routines, whether it's pitchers, you know, getting a chance to play catch, or whether it's the hitters hitting in the indoor cages. So it was business as usual until about 5:30 when they said that everyone could go home and have a free night off.
Braves are 2-9 on the road. That's the two wins is the fewest among major league teams. Why do you think the Braves struggle so much on the road? I know a lot of teams don't win nearly as many on the road as they do at home, but why do you think the struggles have been so much this season early?
Well, I think you have to look at who they've faced. You know, I think in that first series here in New York a few weeks ago, you get Syndergaard, DeGrom, and Harvey, and so your work's going to be cut out for you there. And then you look at going to Pittsburgh, they had to face Garrett Cole. So they've had to face some pretty darn good starters here in the early portion of the season, as had everybody else. I'm not making excuses that the Braves have had the toughest schedule or the toughest, opponent starters in baseball, but it's been tough. Let's be honest, they've let some games get away. The bullpen was rocky early. You know, the defense wasn't very stellar on the first road trip, so they just did not play really good baseball. And I think that when you give teams like the Mets extra outs, they're going to make the pay. So if you give the Nationals extra outs, it's going to be a tough night for you. So really, it was a combination of a lot of different factors. And going into their home opener, the Braves were the last team to play a home opener. So you take the fact that you're in spring training for, you know, a month and a half, then you go on the road for 10, 11 days. It was really a tough way to start. But again, the Braves aren't making excuses. They're not pointing fingers at the schedule makers. They know they've got to play the schedule in front of them, and that's what they're going to try to do going forward.
Hey, Kevin, before we get you out of here, I know you haven't seen them up close and personal yet, but what do you think of this Eric Thames kid? Got 8 home runs just against the freaking Reds already, 11 on the season. I mean, dude's a rookie, and he's just crushing it, man.
Yeah, it's he's been really one of those very intriguing early season stories. Kind of like Trevor Story was, if you think back last year, to the Rockies. He just came out of the gate. Just red hot. And unfortunately for the Braves, that's where they go next. They'll see him in person over the course of the weekend. So maybe he'll get a lot of these out of his system early and have a few days over the weekend where he cools down a little bit. But I've got a friend out there in Milwaukee who covers the team, and he said he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. And, you know, the fact that he played overseas for a while, you know, I think he really appreciates this opportunity now. I think when you step away from it and go overseas, I think you have a much better appreciation for life in the big league. So he has been outstanding. He's really been must-see TV to this point, and I don't think any of us could have expected that coming into the season, that we'd be talking about a guy in Milwaukee tearing it up, that you want to be in front of the TV when he's coming up to bat.
Well, luckily for the Braves, that they aren't the Reds, because that's where he's getting almost all of his home runs. I mean, homers in each of his first 6 games against the Reds, 8 total against the Reds. It's mind-blowing what he's doing.
Yeah, it really is. And like I said, it kind of reminds you of Trevor Story last year. Now, obviously, that's a different scenario when you're talking about playing in Denver. So it's really apples to oranges, because totally different home ballparks as well.
Great stuff, Kevin. Always appreciate the time. Look forward to catching up with you again next week.
You got it. Thanks, fellas.
So bad news there for the Braves is they'll get Noah Syndergaard tonight. Not good news, but
not the best.
I mean, you were going to get him tonight anyway. Just game one of the series instead of game two. Let's get to our call of the day.
Phone Restore call of the day brought to you by Phone Restore. Drop your phone or iPad and have the dreaded spider web across the screen. Is your computer not working quite like the way you want it to? Bring it to the guys at Phone Restore. Most repairs are done in less than 1 hour. Located at 900 Bob Wallace Avenue. Visit PhoneRestore.com. That's PhoneRestore.com. Speaking of Eric Thames, the reason we talk about him is he had another home run last night. This is a 2-run shot in the bottom of the 6th for Milwaukee.
Now the pitch. Swinging and a drive in the right. Deep. Way back. Get up. Get out of here. Gone for Eric Thames. He's done it again against these Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah, not good are the Reds against Eric Thames for whatever reason. He loves some cooking against Cincinnati. At your phone restore, call of the day.
Let's get to 10 After Tweets, brought to you by First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweets!
You can always tweet into the show at Cube Show. Best way to be a part. At Cole Kubrick, at Arky Shea as well. Earl M-A-U-B tweets in. Be honest, that was just round one. Cube Show tweeted out, breakfast delivered and devoured by at Catered Fresh. Yes, it was just round one. TJ underscore Toller tweets in at Cube Show, the Pope meeting isn't uncommon. I met Pope Benedict the same way. I did not give J's, though.
Yeah, Jim Harbaugh met the Pope, gave him a helmet and a pair of Jordans.
Is that a humble brag?
For TJ Toller?
Meeting the Pope?
It's just a brag. Come on, I met the Pope. How many popes have you met, Cole?
None.
Thank you.
Zero.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's cool.
This tweet comes from Supt Matt Massey. I think Supt is short for Superintendent Matt Massey. Tweets, these are the top 25 high schools in Alabama. Cole, you'll like to hear where some of these schools are.
What are we talking about? Just
top high
schools ranked?
Everything. Academics, graduation rates. Really, I don't think they really care about sports. Number one is Loveless Academic Magnet Program in Montgomery.
I'm sorry.
But number two?
Yes.
Homewood.
Boom.
Number two high school in the state. Number 476 nationally.
I like it.
Now, if I want to give you a little bit now, number four is Mountain Brook. You hate does Homewood hate Mountain Brook? Is there
no,
a rivalry there?
No,
Not really.
There's nothing there? Okay. Locally, though, Bob Jones is number 7 on the list. Virgil is number 8. These are top 25 schools in Alabama. James Clemens is number 10. Man, we're getting smart up in here. Also on the list, Muscle Shoals is at number 15. Arab, number 16. Sparkman is number 18 on that list. And Coleman, number 21. Athens, number 23. And number 25 is Corner High School, if for those who care. That's top 25
Pretty
schools
cool.
in Alabama.
College football talk tweet 17 hours ago. Oklahoma cornerback PJ Mbansor will transfer to Louisville.
Why? Why?
Maybe he likes Peter Sermon. I'm not really sure.
Okay, I think that's not it. I think he's just doing it to get mad at, to get us to get mad at him. I think that's why a lot of these kids announce nowadays that they're going to transfer. It's because they know they're going to find their way onto the program somehow, and they're going to get us upset.
Huh.
Yep, this tweet comes from our friend Kevin McAlpin. He talked about how Freddie Freeman has 7 home runs on the season.
Correct.
4 days ago, he tweeted, dating back to June 13, 2016, Freddie Freeman has hit 32 homers and 419 at-bats, a few more since. The most in the majors over that span. Also, his 7th homer this season came on April 21st. Last year, his 7th homer came on May 20th. He's a full month ahead of schedule.
Wow.
But God, that would be annoying. To have 7 homers and 9 RBIs?
That's frustrating. I feel like this happened to him, a similar thing happened to him last year. Except he didn't hit 7 home runs as fast last year. Robin Theed, at Robin Theed, tweets, airlines are so gangster these days, you have to get jumped into the frequent flyer program.
We briefly mentioned this, but we didn't mention the totality of it. Brad McMurphy tweets, Miami Beach Bowl is leaving Miami after only 3 years. Bowl game likely headed to Frisco, Texas, where it will be played at a 20,500-seat MLS stadium.
We don't have enough football stadiums in Texas?
It also hosts the FCS title game.
Put them in one of those giant high school stadiums they got.
Could be do it. Like, Allen, Texas has got to have some space for you, right?
I would think. I mean, I just...
Does it get to keep the Miami Beach
Bowl?
Football
at a soccer stadium is about as bad as it gets. I don't need that.
Or you're going to get to watch that on the old DirecTV this year, too.
Ross Twing, 256, tweets in, is Louisville like the transfer headquarters? It seems like a lot of kids transfer to Louisville.
They are becoming that.
If it helps them win, I'm sure they'll take them all. I don't know. North Carolina's gotten a lot this offseason. A lot. They've got like 4 from the SEC that should be starting. So,
feeder schools, we call the SEC. They're a feeder school.
We'll take a break. Come back with Booger McFarland of the SEC Network next. Welcome back in, Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. Listen online, umpsports.com. Let's go right to the phones. Welcome in Booger McFarland of the SEC Network. It's been a while since we've had him. Boog, good morning, man. How you doing?
Top of the morning, Cole. What's going on, buddy?
Not a lot. You've been through the process of the NFL draft. It seems like these young men fall more and more under a microscope each and every year, and we begin to – I mean, I saw the story about Dalvin Cook in Sports Illustrated came out today, and more details about his upbringing coming out, a lot of which are not really anything of importance, in my opinion, or even to his fault, but they're things that are going to be discussed around NFL front offices before he's selected. What was the process like for you leading up to the NFL draft? These last 24, 48 hours – before the draft began, what was it like for Booger McFarland?
For me, Cole, I was in Louisiana. You know, I didn't go to New York. I kind of stayed in Louisiana and For me, I was just planning the barbecue, man. We were planning the party and who was going to cook what and what meat I was going to eat. It was all about the food because at this point, you know, all the work is done. The teams know who you are. They know what you're about. You know, making sure that, you know, everybody's got the right cell phone numbers and all that good stuff since I wasn't going to be in New York. But, yeah, you were nervous. Like, I knew I was going to be the first defensive lineman taken. I just didn't know when. And so it was going to be a waiting game for me. I wound up going 15th overall to Tampa. And it's the only year in the last, like, 15 where a defensive lineman didn't go in the, where the first D lineman pick didn't go in the top 10 was my year. So that was a bit unlucky. But I think things turned out okay for me.
Visiting with Booger McFarland of the SEC Network. Now, we discussed your comments on Myles Garrett and the situation that happened while you were up in Bristol. But let me ask you this. If it's not Myles Garrett, who should be the number one selection in this year's draft?
I think if you take away position and you take away, you know, what the NFL is looking for from, you know, needs and all that, I think the best player in this draft is Jamal Adams. I think 1B is Jonathan Allen. I think Mike Williams from Clemson is another guy. Solomon Thomas, the guy from the defensive tackle from Stanford. I think those four players, if you ask me, regardless of position, are probably the four best players in this draft.
Where do you see Solomon Thomas playing? Because we had a draft analyst on earlier this week, and he was discussing him as an edge rusher, and I don't see that from him. I'm not sure he has enough bulk to withstand being an interior defensive lineman week in and week out in the NFL. How do you see him aligning himself on an NFL defense?
Well, first of all, you probably shouldn't have that guy on anymore, if that's what he said, number one. Number two, just think Aaron Donald. Think, you know, 6'1", 6'2", 280, cat quickness, first step like lightning, getting the backfield, penetrator. You know, when I see Solomon Thomas, I think a young Aaron Donald, and Aaron Donald is the best three technique in football.
No, and I've seen a lot to like from Solomon Thomas. He's a guy that does bring a lot of quickness on the inside. He's got really long arms, uses his hands well, good technique. So I didn't picture him as an edge rusher. So if I put you in charge of the Browns, and you talked about basically who you have your top players and where they're rated, but if you're the Browns in the position that they're in, are you selecting Jamal Adams number one?
It's kind of a quandary, Cole, because the Browns have missed on so many quarterbacks, so it puts them in a bad position. Think about it this way. If the Browns had their quarterback, then the Browns could take Myles Garrett number one, wait at 12, probably get Reuben Foster at 12, and then use the other three picks they have in the top 50 to finish that defense out. But because they missed on a quarterback, they're going to have to package some of those picks to get a quarterback, because if you don't have a quarterback, you're wasting your time in the NFL. So I would probably take Myles Garrett at number one because the potential, and the draft is all about potential. And I don't think it's like, if you're Cleveland, I don't think that you can take the risk that if he turns out to be what he's capable of being, you can't miss that. Now you have to ask yourself, what's his floor? And I think the floor for Myles Garrett could be Courtney Brown. And if you think that that's the case, then I don't know if you take him. I still think the upside is there. I'd take Myles Garrett one. I'd come back at 12, probably get Reuben Foster maybe at 12, and then kind of go from there. The draft is about minimizing risk, and that's what most teams do. But if you're Cleveland, I think you got to take some risk because you basically made so many bad picks. Now, if you know, let's say the 49ers were choosing number one. If I'm the 49ers, yeah, I would probably take Jonathan Allen number one. Like, it all depends on who you are and where you are in your franchise as far as building your team. I don't think Cleveland can pass on the ceiling of Myles Garrett, even though I still have question marks about it.
It's a very intriguing statement that you make about when you're selecting someone, not only minimizing risk, but what is the floor of that player? So what's the least that you're going to get? It's something that I've thought about with a Jonathan Allen, with a Derek Barnett, But with Myles Garrett, I think there's some more uncertainty about maybe what that guy will be as far as worst-case scenario. Not that he's a bad kid or would be in trouble, but as a player, what is worst-case scenario? And that's something that I assume is very real with NFL general managers and head coaches. Booger McFarland of the SEC Network joining us. Let's discuss some of the guys that you've mentioned. You've brought up Jonathan Allen. You've brought up Reuben Foster. This Alabama front seven is also going to lose Tim Williams, who I think is the best speed rusher of the Saban era. I think Allen is the best, most versatile defensive lineman of the Saban era. Some people say Foster's the best linebacker of the Saban era. Throw in Ryan Anderson, who was a nice role player on that defense, double-digit sacks a season ago. Can that front seven be anywhere near what it was last year, this year, for Nick Saban?
Well, I think the obvious answer to that is no. Those guys that were there are no longer there, and they're gone. So can it be as good? Probably not, but it really doesn't have to be. I think you have to get the young guys to come in, and you know, you get guys that can make plays. You get some of the freshmen, like a Dylan Moses coming in. You know, you get some of the guys that are young, that are talented, that can be put in a position to make plays. So they don't have to be. That's the great thing about football, Cole. Like, you don't have to be what the team was last year. Last year's team was a team that was could get to the quarterback with four guys. This year's team might be a blitzing team again. Doesn't mean it's worse or it doesn't mean it's better. It just means that it's different. So Alabama's got a ton of talent. They'll be fine. They're going to be very, very young. But, I mean, I'd rather be young and talented than young and untalented.
Booger McFarland of the SEC Network joining us. When you look at that offense, do you think it's a good thing for a guy like Jalen Hurts to have an incoming freshman at quarterback that has high expectations, that shows that he's got talent and has the capability of potentially being a player in this league?
I think it's good to have competition. You know, there's an old verse in the Bible that says iron sharpens iron, so shall one man sharpen another. So competition always brings out the best in people, and I think Jalen Hurts needs that. You know, as much as Tua looked good, Tua, in my opinion, is still a freshman. So I'm going to go with Jalen Hurts, who's the guy that, in my opinion, is the better player right now.
When you say that, when you speak of competition that way, is that applicable today for a guy like Mark Ingram?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, you can never have enough good players. So I like the Adrian Peterson move. I think the Saints are going to be really good. To go along with Drew Brees, and I think that's a good move for them.
Booger McFarland of the SEC Network joining us. You spent some time in Baton Rouge this offseason discussing that team. I watched the first half of the spring game, and they went inside. I like what I see on offense. I mean, Matt Cannon's going to do some different things. He's going to move guys around. He's going to put guys in position to make plays. What a great way to start with the best running back in college football. You got some weapons still in DJ Chark and a couple of big tight ends. Drake Davis is a nice weapon down the field. Can they compete with a middle-of-the-road mediocre quarterback in Danny Etling?
They're going to have to because the other guys aren't ready to play, and we'll see what Miles Brennan is when he gets on campus. But, I mean, Danny Etling is the guy that's going to have to play. I still don't think Danny Etling is the guy that's going to win you a championship. Can he be a piece of a big puzzle? Absolutely. But can he win it? No. And so I think, you know, LSU, for as many expectations as they had last year, there's a lot of questions this year because they're going to be so young. They got talent. Like them in Alabama, if you think about it, them in Alabama are in a very similar situation. They lose a lot. They're young. They're talented. Alabama has a better quarterback, but we'll see how it all plays out. I think – The team with the less question marks in the West is probably Auburn, especially if Stidham shows up and plays well.
So you say the fewest question marks on the field for any team in the SEC in 2017 would be Auburn?
I think when you look in the West, if you look at the West and you look at the landscape in the West, you look who lost everything. LSU, Bama, Auburn, and you look what they have coming back, I mean, let's just say Stidham played to the level he was playing at Baylor. I mean, he's a better passer right now than anything that LSU and Alabama has, right? I mean, if he goes back and plays at that level, he is.
Sure.
Now, Auburn is going to be a little young at safety, but I think the front seven depth is going to be there. Corners will be okay. I mean, Auburn has a chance to be really, really good. Alabama is still more talented, but I think the fewest questions, if, and I put the if out there, if Stidham is who he was at Baylor before the injury, I think you can say that.
Wow. SEC Booger on Twitter if you want to follow along. Boog, we always appreciate the time, man. It's good to catch up. Anything else? I know you always have something extra before we let you run. What's on your mind today?
No, I don't have anything extra, man. I'm trying to do some work in the office, man, so I'm going to sit back and probably listen to the rest of the Cube show, man.
How about your boy Jeter buying the Marlins?
Hey, man, some people got FU money, man. You got it.
I think it's good for baseball to have him around the game, so it'd be cool. Appreciate it, Bud. Good stuff, man.
Later.
We do not have FU money here on Cube Show, but
no. $265 million in his career he has made. Not Booger, Derek Jeter. That's the second most all time. Do you want to know who's made the most money all time
on the field?
Yes.
I would say Alex Rodriguez.
That's right, Alex Rodriguez.
Yeah, and still making it, by the way, to not play.
It's funny because those numbers will adjust because you got guys like Bryce Harper and Stanton.
Kershaw.
Giancarlo and Stanton and Clayton Kershaw, whose numbers will get there. But right now, 1-2 is...
Giancarlo's single biggest deal ever. But he's only had one big deal, even though it's the biggest.
Yeah, and he hasn't collected all this money yet either.
Sure, okay. So, yeah, that makes sense.
So, 1-2 right now.
Who's three? Do you have a three?
I don't. I can look that up, though, for you.
I would think Bonds has to be there at some point. I mean, Bonds was over $20 million for his last few years.
I'll look that up. We'll see if we can get that during the break.
A-Rod got stupid money.
A-Rod was getting like $25 million a year from Texas and then went to the Yankees and ended up getting like $28 million a year.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see who three was. I'm trying to think who three might be one of the younger guys.
I'll look it up during the break.
All right, back with more Cube Show next. Welcome back here at Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump.
So I found that list that we were looking for of the highest paid players ever, career contracts, and I think I found this through the 2015 season, which will actually through the 2013 season. I apologize, but this will give us our top ones that are most recent. When we especially got guys like Clayton Kershaw, who's going to be getting I think at $32 million 2 years ago or a year ago. For one season, so it's a lot of money there. So number one was Alex Rodriguez through 2013. He had $353 million, but we know that he's made over twenty a year for the next 2 years. After that, I think it was 21 this year. Cole number two, Derek Jeter. Number three, he's out with Barry Bonds.
Yes,
close. Manny Ramirez. $206.8 million.
He played for a long time, and he got a huge contract with Cleveland, and he got a huge contract. I think he got like a $135 million deal with Boston. So yeah, it makes sense.
Number four was Barry Bonds. Want to take a guess what his number was?
Total?
Yeah.
205.
Well, not far off, but 188. 188.2.
Not bad.
A bargain.
I would like to see though, seriously, what the last 5 years were compared to how many years did he play?
He played
16, 18?
86 to 07.
I would like to see comparatively what the last 5 years were to the other years because I bet it's way lopsided.
That would be some lopsided.
Because he kind of pulled off that Jordan deal where he signed a bunch of one-year deals down the stretch for like 23 and 18. So he was backloaded big time.
Number five on the list, it's a pitcher.
Now, Clemens went for a really, really long time. Mm-hmm. And I know the Yankees gave him over $20 million more than twice. So I'll go Roger Clemens.
No, Pedro Martinez.
Randy Johnson, 175.5. Under.
That's a lot.
Underappreciated how much money he made. For Montreal, Seattle, Houston, Arizona, New York, and San Francisco. Forgot he was with San Francisco for a brief biscuit. Also a pitcher for his number 6. Want to take another guess at that? At 169.4. He played for your team.
For my team?
Mm-hmm.
I'll go Clemens.
For his entire career, he played for your team, Mariano Rivera.
Oh, yeah, man. He got... See, longevity comes into play, and then a couple big contracts.
95 to 2013.
Yeah. A couple big contracts late can sort of put you over the top.
Contract deal. Number 7 on that list, Atlanta Braves own Chipper Jones.
Wow.
168.5.
That's so much money.
It's a lot of four-wheeler rides with Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah. Gary Sheffield next at 168.008 million.
Gary Sheffield.
Yep. Todd Helton is next, followed by Carlos Beltran at 160 million.
That was like 80% of that was one contract.
Johan Santana.
Wow.
He got one contract. That's basically what he got. Greg Maddux. Ichiro at 152.6 so far. Ken Griffey Jr. at 151, and then there's Roger Clemens rounding out the $150 million club at 150.6. By the way, Roy Halladay is next on that list, 148. Just looking at some of these names that are on the list, career earners, Torrey Hunter at 146.5. At the time, CC had at 146.3. He's now getting close to 200. Carlos Delgado, 140, dadgum. And Pedro, 146.25. Wow. God bless him, right?
Yeah, it's so much money.
Get that kind of contract. So those are your top earners. And now we will get a whole bunch of these contracts coming up where, like, Clayton Kershaw was first guy to get over $30 million a year. He's getting, like, 32.7 or something like that. He's going to make a whole bunch of money. But, Cole, it wasn't that long ago that... I'll ask you this. Do you know who the first player ever to make over $1 million in a season for Major League Baseball? A pitcher.
The first player to make over 30?
Over $1 million in a year.
I feel like I should remember this. Was it Clemens?
Mm-mm. A little older.
Nolan Ryan didn't get $1 million, did he?
Nolan Ryan, first one to get $1 million in a season.
That guy played for such a long time. He threw the baseball for such a long time.
You know what's weird about baseball and what's weird about all these sports is I was thinking about this last night when I was watching the Grizzlies and Spurs for a couple minutes. Mike Conley's getting over $30 million a year this year for this year.
How silly.
How crazy is it that a lot of this is so much timing? Like Nolan Ryan is better than Roy Halladay.
Yes.
But Roy Halladay made infinitely almost more money than Nolan Ryan.
It's Johan Santana, you just said.
Yeah.
He's top 10 player all time.
There's so many weird things about nowadays that, like, I think about with old football players, too. With, like, old great football players.
Oh, we could throw
guys
a quarterback.
Guys would get, like, $12,000 for a year.
I bet Jay Cutler and Sam Bradford are probably in the top 15 all time in career earnings in the NFL. And that has to do with timing of when they were drafted. That has to do with the thirst of that position and how crazy NFL teams are for quarterbacks. And the timing of when certain teams were ready to throw a ton of money at a quarterback.
According to SpotRack, the number one all-time is Eli Manning.
That's crazy to think about.
$205 million.
He's not even done. He's got a ways to go.
Tom Brady, 196.
It's not surprising that he's up there. It's also not surprising he's not number one because he's altered a few of his deals.
The top six are quarterbacks. Manning, Brady, Breeze, Phillip Rivers, Big Ben, and Carson Palmer, 156. Highest paid non-quarterback ever, career earnings, according to SpotRack, is Julius Peppers at 155.
Yeah, he was elite for a while.
Then it goes Larry Fitzgerald.
Got 2 months of deals.
Who did you just bring up? Sam Bradford with $96 million career earning.
Yeah, not top 15. He also was only started for like 3 years.
So Jay Cutler, you said?
I said Cutler, yeah.
Yeah, still scrolling. Cam Newton's 35th on the list already.
How's he ahead of Jay Cutler?
I don't know.
I think they messed up and left Jay Cutler off that list. Because Jay Cutler's gotten two monster.
Past him.
Cutler's gotten two monster contracts. He might not be on that list because he doesn't have a team right now. Is this active by chance?
Mark Sanchez, $72 million.
What? Jay Cutler's made more money than Mark Sanchez. Come on.
Again, I said I may have. Let's see, hold on. Career earnings, all positions.
This is active NFL players. I see it in the top right. Active.
I'll go through 2016, which was last year. Adjust that and see if I can find Jay Cutler on the list. This is great radio, by the way.
It's awesome radio. We're talking about how much money NFL quarterbacks make.
No, I mean just
so Jay Cutler's
down.
Not on the list. All right, we'll get to a break. We'll come back with more Cube Show right after this.